And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5. And Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395 6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Iran's Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi has met with Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, as well as that country's foreign minister, in Cairo on Monday. Regional issues were at the top of the agenda, and the importance of cooperation between Cairo and Tehran was reiterated. Now, the latest round of the Israeli genocide against Palestinians in Gaza was discussed, as well as Iran's indirect nuclear talks with the United States. Meanwhile, Araghchi also met with the IAEA chief regarding his latest report, which was critical of Iran. Can greater solidarity between regional countries help bring about solutions to regional issues which are being fanned by external entities? We'll take a look at all of this on this Spotlight. I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst out of Canada. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of the UK.
This is the Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
I'd like to start this off in London with Said Mohsen Abbas. I mean, your perspective, how do you see the visit by Iran's foreign minister to Egypt at this time as being significant or not?
Well, it's clear that Egypt is part and parcel of the problem in West Asia. In that sense, it's an interesting move because Egypt has been in lockstep with the US, with the Israeli establishment. And so I think it's important that powers like the Islamic Republic of Iran, with integrity, especially vis-a-vis the situation in Palestine, do talk and meet with people like Sisi, because in a way, people like Sisi are propped up by the finances and the funding of America. I mean, he takes billions of dollars in order to do what he does for them out there, for the sake of Israel and other factors. But of course, the only way to wean these puppets off the American and Israeli udders is by showing them that there can be fraternity and there can be unity regionally. And I think this is the push that Iran has always had, even though I think they've had huge pushback from these sort of people, the KSA, the state, the Gulf states, the monarchies and the dictators like Sisi or Jordan's King Hussein, etc. All of them are essentially the same kind of puppets. But getting them away from the American and the Israeli alliance is an important part of diplomacy, I guess. And I think on several fronts, Iran itself also right now does need to in a way, allay the fears of these people, which are pumped up by the Americans, vis-a-vis American saber-rattling around the nuclear issue. So the sort of things that they accuse Iran of in terms of nuclear enrichment levels and the fact that they want them to not have any kind of nuclear capability whatsoever, leave alone military capable ones, or arms capable nuclear materials. All of this also requires allaying of fears within the regional neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I think Iran is doing that. And I think that's partly why they're meeting, I guess.
Well, let's talk about that. You said it's part of the what Iran is trying to do, allay those fears. I mean, how much do you think that we see other regional countries wanting for Iran to have its nuclear rights? I mean, how important is forging these regional ties in order for Iran really to get those nuclear rights? I mean, do you see them being able to understand or relating, or is there that fear factor there?
If you're relating that to me, Marzia, then I would say that part of what the Americans are proposing within the latest, in the fifth round, is interesting, because they're saying that they want to move towards a regional grouping to produce nuclear power. So Iran, the KSA, Gulf states, the USA would all be involved in some kind of nuclear production, which would be clearly then monitored by the Americans. So essentially taking away sovereignty of Iran, I would say. But, you know, I'd say that there is a push on the Americans' part. The Iranians have wanted regional unity for a long time. They've had the HOPE initiative, for instance, the Hormuz, fraternal document still exists. The template still exists. It's down to the regional Arab nations to stop feeding America, stop giving their billions away to them as they did just recently, and actually invest in their own region, and to invest in a way where there's greater Islamic unity, greater unity of the Muslim people in that region, which would actually be healthy for the entire world. A stable West Asia would benefit the entire world. Right now, the acquiescence to Israeli and American imperialism by these powers, like Egypt, like the Gulf states, is only actually creating instability because of this insecurity they have. And they bought into the narrative of the Zionist narrative of Persian versus Arab, Shia versus Sunni. These are narratives that have been psyops and out of the Israeli playbook and the imperialist playbook for many, many centuries. So we should really have wised up to it. Iran certainly has. Egypt needs to get its act together. But of course, these are insecure leaders. They're dictators who've been brought to power. They're not there because the people want them. So they always operate on fear, insecurity.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, Sid Mohsen. I'm going to stay with you. We're still having some issues with our other guests and that line. You know, you just mentioned about the consortium that the U.S. is proposing. Well, here we go. I have John with me. John, welcome. I'm going to switch over then to Canada from the U.K. and get John in on this conversation. Now, John, when we look at the overall situation, because we were talking about the Iranian foreign minister's visit to Egypt, one would think a country, for example, like Egypt, that has also actually experienced, for example, their nuclear scientists being killed by Israel, that there would be actually increasing solidarity between Cairo and Tehran, and basically looking at, I mean, what would benefit, for example, Tehran and getting its natural nuclear rights could also benefit Egypt and other regional countries. I mean, how do you see it?
That makes logical sense to me, but we don't, when we speak logically, we're not, of course, calculating the subterfuge and the pressures that the United States, the Israel lobby, and Israel itself place on every party that does any type of business or contact with Iran.
Yeah, right. Indeed. Well, let's, Sid Mohsen, crossing back over to you. I mean, you were talking about a little bit earlier about that consortium. So let's talk about the hypocrisy in all of this. So the United States is proposing some type of consortium with itself and then regional countries, including Iran. And as is being discussed inside of Iran, it says it's quite ironic. On the one hand, it says it wants to sanction Iran for everything. On the other hand, it's willing to deal with it. I mean, what is happening here? There seems to be such schizophrenic policy coming out of Washington in dealing with the nuclear issue in Iran.
It's part of Trump's style. It is Trump's administration's style to play hardball, play good cop, bad cop. I think he constantly thinks he's in some kind of boardroom business deal, whereas this is politics. This is, you know, interstate politics, and it really isn't the way that you do politics in the real world. It doesn't work, and the Iranians are very smart, wise, old players in this game of diplomacy. So playing these kind of childish games is ridiculous in the extreme. But there we have it. That's what we're up against in terms of the American administration. Look, they have increased sanctions during these very talks. So if the U.S. was trying to put an olive leaf out, try to show goodwill, show balance and fairness, they wouldn't have slammed more sanctions. They'd have shown some effort to reduce sanctions. I mean, they're giving no indication of what the mechanism or the framework or any process or procedures that might take place if the sanctions were to be reduced, because the sanctions being reduced is a minimal requirement that Iran would need for them to consider reducing the uranium enrichment. They're certainly not going to stop uranium enrichment, which is what the Americans and the Israelis, essentially the Israelis, are insisting on that. And so I don't see where it goes. If those two things stay where they are, it's very hard to see any deal being reached. Of course, the things that don't come on the table, which Iran could put on the table, are, well, its sworn enemy and the main cause of all the conflict and the wars and the problems and the apartheid and the genocide in that region comes from Israel. And Israel has 400 nuclear weapons which it doesn't even admit it has. The IAEA doesn't go in and investigate them. They're not subject to the Nuclear Proliferation Treaty, and there's no pressure put on Israel by America or the Western powers to scrutinize anything they do. And yet the hypocrisy of then going to Iran and nitpicking over whether it's 1% or 2% uranium that's increased and using that as a leverage to try and put more pressure on Iran is, again, another part of the Western hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. Nobody talks about the U.S. military bases that are all surrounding Iran. Each one of those military bases is very likely to have nuclear capability. Certainly the Fifth Navy parked in Qatar will have capabilities. Nobody also discusses the military, the naval powers which have got nuclear weapons pointed at Iran every minute of the day. There's nobody talking about dismantling that threat, is there? Of course, KSA, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, has actively this last 2 or 3 weeks been given the go-ahead by the Americans to increase their nuclear capability. So another antagonist or protagonist of Iran in the region is being given nuclear capabilities and a carte blanche to go ahead with them, with U.S. firms pitching in to invest in them. And then the hypocrisy of telling Iran that it can't have any nuclear enrichment capabilities is, of course, it stinks to high heaven. And it's actually just the reason why the Iranians don't trust the Americans. Right. And yet still, to the credit of Iran, they're trying to put the olive leaf out and say, look, you know, we are willing to come to an agreement if there is reciprocity and some kind of common sense and some, I guess, respect of Iranian sovereignty and its own security needs.
Well, what about that, John? I mean, can we expect respect for Iranian sovereignty from the United States when basically, if we look at since 1979, it doesn't seem like that has been a priority for Washington, respecting Iran's sovereignty. And as Said Mohsen said in London, when we look at the hypocrisy of what is going on, especially in the middle of the genocide, and of course the Israeli entity possessing nuclear weapons, but nothing is being said, and on the other hand, continually trying to create issue after issue for Iran, which is trying to cooperate with the IAEA. I mean, your overall perspective on this?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I agree with every syllable that your other guest here today has spoken. These are not opinions which are colored by origin or religion or anything else. Israel is a nuclear power. It denies that. Israel refuses to allow inspections of its nuclear capacity. America is a government which is subject to the Israel lobby, which basically selects who gets elected to the U.S. Congress and who gets elected to the presidency. We have a very unusual president in the United States today. He is definitely an egomaniac, which is not unusual for politicians. And there may be some space between U.S. President Donald Trump and Netanyahu. And that space, that gap, is the area that could be used by Iran to bring some justice to this whole situation. The possibility of that is greater with Trump than with the run-of-the-mill Republican and Democratic presidents who have always been predictable. The United States has been 100% predictable as an ally of Israel on every topic, even when Israel attacked the USS Liberty and killed American sailors. So this is not a new situation, but I think that the chaos government, and it's intentional. Donald Trump's chaos operation is intentional. It might leave some leeway for Iran, because the whole world knows that it is unreasonable to stop Iran from having the right to generate nuclear power. And if Iran continues to do activities that are permitted to other countries and is attacked by Israel or is attacked by the United States at the behest of Israel, then the world is going to have to stand up to defend Iran, or we live on a completely lawless, immoral, warmonger planet. And I don't believe that that's the way the world should be run.
Okay. Well, Said Mohsen, I mean, Arak, she met with IAEA Chief Grossi also in Cairo regarding his latest report, basically saying Iran is increasing its stockpile of uranium enriched to near weapon grade level. And, of course, Iran has responded time and time again to this type of criticism. I mean, how politicized are these international bodies such as the IAEA? Can they function independently?
No. The answer is very simple. All of these organizations, the UN, the IAEA, the chemicals agency, watchdog agencies, the WHO, they are institutions which are built by the imperialist powers under their auspices with their money. And if it's not directly coming from the US government and the state, what they do is they cover it up through Bill Gates, for instance, who finances the WHO to a phenomenal extent. Now, who's Bill Gates? He's part of the imperialist establishment, the Zio Western imperialist establishment. The corporations in the background, if you want to see who also are there, people like Larry Fink, you know, Jewish Zionist head of BlackRock, the biggest hedge fund, the biggest mover and shaker in terms of global business, is totally aligned with Israeli-American interests. And these people basically fund and finance these large, quangos, which are essentially post-Second World War mechanisms for maintaining U.S. hegemony around the world. That's how they've operated, as far as I can see. And, of course, the IAEA is particularly guilty because they've been going running, crying to the Europeans and to Americans and anybody else who will listen the minute anything they think is slightly awry of their little agenda. The agenda is basically the same as the Israeli one, which is to destroy Iran's sovereign right to be able to produce nuclear energy for its people. I would personally, if it was me, I mean, I'd be quite comfortable with going down the North Korean route and actually building a nuclear deterrent, because that seems to have worked for them. I mean, the US isn't threatening North Korea at the moment. Donald Trump isn't threatening to turn over North Korea anytime soon. Could it be that they have a nuclear weapon and that's why he's a little bit worried or perturbed? And is that the direction Iran should go? Well, Ayatollah Khamenei said no, because he's saying morally we don't agree with it. And Araghchi has said again this week that actually nuclear weapons are unacceptable. But if they're unacceptable to Iran, they should be unacceptable to the Americans and to the Israelis for Iran to even begin to consider that they would never go towards a nuclear weapons option. And not only that, I mean, Mr. Head of the IAEA has turned around and said that Iran is now 45 times over the limit authorized by the landmark 2015 JCPOA agreement. Which agreement is he talking about? Excuse me. The reality is that the Europeans and the Americans have reneged on that treaty. They didn't even do anything towards it. They gave Iran nothing. Iran was complying with most of the JCPOA for most of the time when it was in its place. It was the likes of Donald Trump and the Europeans who, whether they were saying they'd use INSTEX or they'd use all sorts of other mechanisms to keep that agreement going and to give Iran something in return for dropping its entire capability of producing nuclear weapons. Well, it hasn't happened. So I'm afraid these Western institutions are in lockstep with Israeli Zionist imperialist policy, and their orders are essentially come from those shadowy forces, whether we like it or not, and you can't really separate the two. Iran operates on a simple philosophy. The Quran says, do not oppress and do not be oppressed. That's chapter 279. Iran is an Islamic spiritual political democracy. Now, it operates according to some virtue ethics and some morality. This is its morality. Nuclear weapons are an oppressive instrument of power used against those who don't have it. And, of course, Iran and its tenets, its faith, dictate that it should not be oppressed. Now, by any means necessary, in the end, Iran will go for the protection of its people, it'll go for the protection of its sovereignty, and it will not allow American psyops, black ops, regime change operations, which have been incessant, and which, by the way, will now increase, without a doubt, if the agreement doesn't go through. And no doubt the Israelis will be a step closer to try and hit Iranian nuclear installations, which would then potentially kick off Armageddon. We could get an entire global meltdown as the energy crisis kicks in when Iran shuts down the Hormuz, knocks out all the American military bases around it, and retaliates in kind with Israel and whoever else is in on the operation to attack its nuclear facilities.
Okay, well, John, I mean, on the one hand, Iran says it's red line. It will not back away from its right to enrichment. Of course, the United States is saying that Tehran must stop all enrichment. Where do you see all of this heading?
Well, I actually, despite the terrible circumstances we're in today, I see people like myself who are not from the region, who are not Islamic. I'm a believing Christian. Who are coming to the same conclusion that I am coming to, and that is that Iran has the basic right to generate nuclear power. And in fact, in principle, as your other guest said today, Iran has in principle the right to have a nuclear weapon just as much as Israel has, just as much as America has. And in fact, there is only one country on this planet that has ever used a nuclear weapon, and it used it twice, and it killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. And that country is the United States. And paradoxically, that is the same company, it is a company, isn't it, the United States? But that is the same country that is now trying to dictate to Iran, and very much so to the rest of the world, to say what others can do. This current manner of international governance and international affairs does not work. We are seeing a genocide in Palestine. We are seeing a situation in which North Korea could only secure its safety by having nuclear weapons. Something is going to have to give, and it is not going to be the three quarters of the world that is not under the control of the Anglo-American Zionist Empire. Unfortunately, here I am sitting in Canada telling you that many, many Canadians, the closest ally of America, have now seen what it means to be the closest ally of America when America is talking about physically, by violent means, annexing our country. There is going to be change, and it's going to come not just in Iran, it's going to come around the world.
Okay. And on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me. John Busnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst out of Fredericton, Canada. Said Mohsen Abbas, journalist and political commentator out of London, UK. Thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Goodbye.
last savior.
Oh, the savior of mankind, please show us a sign.
To the designer of the human civilization that is established on the unity of Almighty Allah.
Light of Allah, you are a true God.
To the redeemer of human volition and thought.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. A very warm welcome to the Enlightening Waves of IRIB English Radio. You're listening to the program The Last Savior. Brother Muhammad Liaquat Abbas. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaikum assalam, sister.
A very warm welcome.
Thank you so much.
Brother Liaquat is a research scholar in the House of Ulema of Qom and has a deep insight on this particular topic. You know, once I posted on my Facebook account that about the Imam, he is there like a sun behind the clouds. And there was a lady who commented on it that he's only a non-existent myth. So in the era where we live, where there's social media pressure, where there are people commenting on your faith, on your beliefs, how do we maintain this faith, especially when it comes to the faith about Imam? How do we strengthen this faith in this era especially?
This is a beautiful question, because in today's world, social media technology takes us away from the truth sometimes, or even I would say many a times, until or unless we use the technology in a proper way, like it should be used, and that is when, like, we can use it in a manner how we want, yeah?
Yeah.
Technology, be it social media. If we don't take it in our hand and we let it loose, then it is going to take us away, like, to a far land where there's no faith, there's nothing about religion, you see? So it's very important to have this faith in our hand and to know how to use the technology properly.
Right.
Yeah, and of course, we can use technology for the reappearance as well.
Like, yeah.
Of course, there are many ways how we can do that. But as of your question, like how to strengthen our faith, the responsibility again, which falls upon the shoulder of an awaiter of the Imam, Ajallallahu Ta'ala Farajah Sharif, is to have a strong and unwavering or unshakable faith. And
right.
In today's world, just like you have said, like, this is just a myth. And they are riwayah, to be frank. It's not just the people who are saying this. Even the Ahlul Bayt, alayhim wassalatu wassalam, have said this.
All right.
There will come a time where people will say, like, even the awaiters will mm-hmm. say this, that the Imam is never going to reappear because of the prolonged time which is going to happen.
All right.
The awaiters will say this, imagine, yeah? And they would say, okay.
So it's alarming.
Until now we have awaited and there's no sign of the 12th Imam. If there was an Imam, he would show us somewhere or the other.
Right.
So the Imam is just, this is just a myth. This is just a created thing.
Right.
These are the Imams who have told about the 12th Imam. Okay, so there are many ahadiths which I would say we should go, and because it's away from my topic, it's not my topic. Otherwise, I would have brought a lot of ahadiths, like
right.
where the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, they cried for the 12th Imam.
Right.
See, like when an Imam cries for another Imam, that shows the intensity, like how much emotional, it's not just a normal emotion, it's an emotion of haqq, meaning this is the place where we should have emotions.
Truth and righteousness.
Yep. Like
yeah.
These are the tears of, really a person should cry upon the Imam's prolonged occultation.
Right.
Hold me by your hand and please show me the way to be one of the pure and chosen companions, so that I can swear the oath of allegiance. I'll give everything that I love in God's name to avenge the blood of your grandfather Hussein. Every step of the way, my dream will come true. On my last breath, oh Master, I'll call out to you. Oh Light of Allah, you are my true guide. I'm waiting for you to die by your side.
Welcome back. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. And Brother Liaquat Abbas is helping us how to strengthen our faith, especially when it comes to Imam. And in this era, which is the era of social media, which is the era of, a lot of delusion and a lot of ways where faith is being shaked. So how do we maintain that strong, firm faith in this era? Yes, Brother Liaquat.
So about the Imam, like Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salatu wasalam would see him and he would cry and he would say, "Oh my son, may Allah give you sabr for the prolonged occultation which you're going to have."
Patience.
And Imam Ali alayhi salam would say, "He is al-mardud, he is someone who is away from everyone. He is someone who's going to live in the deserts, in the forests and everything, yeah? He's someone who's going to be all alone, like all alone, all by himself." You see? So it's something which we have to have this thing in our hearts. Like we have to have this emotion in our heart. And we have to bring it in our real life as well. Like, okay, I am missing someone in my daily life. You see? I start my day with this feeling. Example. These kind of things, you know? These kind of things strengthen our faith.
Yeah.
These emotions, this feeling, this missing feeling, that the sense that I am not having someone in my life. I cannot meet someone in my life today.
Yeah.
Whom I should be meeting today.
Right.
I should have met yesterday, but I didn't meet. Today, I want to meet him. Oh Allah, please make me meet him. When we want to think about the Imam, technology comes forward. And example, I'm just giving you an example. And a few videos are played and few, I don't know, some pranks and few, I would say some laughing.
Jokes.
I don't know for what reason, which don't have any kind of goal in it.
But they're engineered
just,
in a way.
Sorry?
They're engineered in a way to keep you...
To keep you busy, to keep you, like,
to
deviated.
Keep watching unnecessary stuff.
Really. Yeah, exactly. Yes,
that has got nothing to do with the real
nothing
life
to do.
Real
there's,
life goals.
There's no use at all in your real life. There's no use at all. You'll just laugh for a while, and you're like, okay, I have wasted my time. Like, you see, few people might say, oh, you know what, this is just 1-2 minutes. Okay, if it is 1 or 2 minutes, then okay, fine, maybe. That too you have to see what kind of videos are you watching. Like, are they sensible or are they senseless and everything?
Do they make sense?
That's another topic altogether. But over here, you're taken away, you're carried away. And ours, our youth's example, the precious time of their life, you see, where they have to be spending the time with their beloved. Yeah, thinking about the beloved, they are deviated in today's world, trust me, because of the faith which is weakening day by day.
أهدى سنه مهديون في الأزمان شع ضيه ربنا في العالمين أضفع له نور أليق والظالم ابتدأ من أجل السالكين أهدى سنه.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is The Last Savior. Brother Liaquat Abbas is with us. You said it won't be exaggeration to say that not even 100 people have that real, true faith for the Imam. Because the faith, like many may have faith, but the real faith that is firm in the face of all storms, in the face of all delusions, in the face of all illusions that are being created, is very, very less, actually. So, yeah, we were trying to give the way out. How do we strengthen that faith?
So, I would say, like, the first option is to get to know about the Imam himself. In today's world, our youths don't know much about the Imam.
Yeah.
If I tell a young man, talk to me about the Imam.
Yeah.
for 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I will be surprised. Oh, mashallah. And it's a good thing if a person has spoken for like 15 minutes about the imam, really about the imam. Like, what is it about? Like, when he was born, what are his maqasid or what are his goals?
Goals.
Yeah. What is he waiting for from his Shias? What are his expectations? Yeah. And how is his government going to be? Like, everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the reasons is we don't even have Mahdawiyat classes as well. Yeah. Oh. There are no classes of Mahdawiyat and where it is
they're not
told.
Much general, much they're very special classes about Mahdawiyat, but not on a very general scale.
No, not on a general scale.
And unfortunately, I remember like when I also wanted to go for Mahdawiyat classes, like for, in the very beginning, like knowing nothing about religion, I wanted to know about the imam. No, everyone has that thirst inside, I guess. But unfortunately, the many education systems have this criteria. No, you have to read a... We have certain criteria. You have to go through a lot of subjects. Then only you can go for Mahdawiyat. So yes, it's not generalized. It's a very precise thing.
You know, the thing is, they want to learn. There are people who are awaiting. Again, I'm saying you. Like, there's a spectrum where there's a higher form of waitingness.
Yeah.
There's a lower form of waitingness.
Right.
Like, to be frank, everyone are the awaiters of the imam, okay? Some might be, like, waiting for, like, maybe 1% in their life. Some might be, like, 2%. If they kind of see their whole life, they have waited for the imam for, like, only 2% of their lives.
Oh.
You see? Some might be like 10%, some might wait for like
more.
50% and maybe more and more,
yeah.
You see? So, like, you know, for this thing to happen, the understanding, the deep understanding of the imam should arise.
Like, yes.
It's not just about understanding. There's knowledge, understanding about the imam. There's tazkiyatun nafs, that is purification of the soul, which should happen.
Soul, yeah.
And inshallah, we will speak about it later, yeah? And there's about reinforcing belief, like how do I increase my belief in the imam? One is faith in itself, like the general faith,
right.
about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala and everything, which is also important. And my strong belief towards the imam, which I've told you.
Right.
Like every day I wake up, these are just tips, you know.
Right.
There are many things where a person can strengthen his belief in the imam. Example, like I'm eating food, I would be like, okay, there's a cultural thing which I've seen amongst my grandparents. Even my parents do this when they cook some new food, like
yeah.
They would keep some aside
amount,
and they would be like, this is for the Fatiha, this is just as a gift for the imam of our time.
All right.
You see, this is a good thing. Like I would say this can be applied elsewhere as well, like writing letters to the imam.
All
you
right.
See, on a general basis we chat with many people, just write a small letter for the imam and keep it in your book somewhere in your book and gather them over the years, and you will see like it's barakah as well. I met a person who is 75. He showed me a big book where he has written letters, everything. Every second day he would write books. He would write letters for the imam.
Nice.
I was really surprised looking at this man. I was like, wow, mashallah, you have a strong belief. You really have this belief that the imam is going to reappear. These kind of people will not be easily carried away. Because they know the goal that
yeah.
they have to reach the imam. Inshallah, may Allah give us the blessing that we are counted amongst the true awaiters.
True awaiters of imam. So like constant connection with imam, like in this era where there's a lot of distracted world, to keep ourselves connected, like as you gave one of the examples, to stay connected by writing letters. And then as you gave example, like there was a guy who made a book of his letters. So yeah, just to stay connected in this distracted world will help a lot. And also the purification of soul and other steps that you mentioned. Thank you for your valuable insights.
Thank you,
dear listeners. You were listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another episode, take good care. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Where is the shining moon? Where is the firmest road? Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Places in downtown Tehran where I can find everything I need for happiness. Nice people, check. Nice shops, check. Something nice to eat, check.
Street food is theater. It's insanely great flavors, it's inexpensive, and it's excellent for Instagram likes. So follow me as I take a stroll in the streets of the capital.
The most popular Middle Eastern street food of them all. Falafels don't really need an introduction.
There are many small shops right around the corner that fry up hundreds of these chickpea balls. The recipe is simple, but remember, falafel making is more about the technique. Just like many other street treats you can find in Tehran.
Now, lamb liver chops on a stick. It is one of my favorite street treats in Tehran.
Fresh liver. It's tasty and it's good for you because it contains loads of iron. The liver is cut into thin stripes and then barbecued over a charcoal fire, seasoned with salt and pepper and a dash of lime juice, and served with warm flatbread, yogurt, and green onions. I wouldn't be exaggerating if I said, this is a taste of Iran.
Tehran is truly the place for the yummiest street treats. Something that you come across very often is these small booths, where you can get fresh pomegranate, pomegranate juice, or pomegranate ice cream.
If you crave sour foods every now and then, you need to stop by one of these to get pomegranate fruit roll-ups and jelly. But what amazes me most is that you can get fresh pomegranate and pomegranate juice from these small shops all year round. Now, if you want something cool and refreshing, look no further. You can always find a glass of fresh fruit juice or traditional Iranian ice cream. Our culinary experience wouldn't be complete without a taste of traditional Iranian dishes. Well, now you know where to go for a quick, inexpensive bite on the run to sample Iran's flavorful cuisine, the streets. Street food has a long and colorful history. Today, it has become an urban mainstay in large cities and small towns alike, and continues to evolve and tempt passersby on the streets.
I have enjoyed most of the greatest meals of my life on the street, eating something out of a bowl. Who could not be happy?
Gisumish Ahmadi for Iran.
The wind whistles as it blows around the tall towers of this magnificent fortress, reminding us all of a standstill in time, a ghost city. But Belgeis city, or the old city of Isfarayan, was much more than that through history. For more than 1,200 years, this fortress, which was a part of a larger city, played a strategic role for many dynasties who wanted to maintain power over parts of this land.
Belgeis city is the name of one of Iran's most mysterious historical sites.
Today, little has remained from the city, which was once known for its splendor and the treasures hidden under its surface and the thick adobe walls of its buildings. The city's fortress, which is partially restored, has many stories to tell. From the attack of Arab and Mongol conquerors to the revival of Belgrade after each invasion. Belgrade was located on the way to important trade routes. Its geographical situation had turned the city into an attraction for everyone in possession of military and political power. During wars, the fortress was a refuge for the people who lived in the city. Less than a kilometer from the fortress, a building lies silently in the middle of a plain where once used to be a busy city. Today, not much has remained from the historic city. But back in its days of glory, Belgrade enjoyed nearly all the features of a perfect city. Not far away from the city's fortress lay the tomb of a mystic and a poet, Sheikh Azari, a man who was highly respected by the people of his time. Sheikh Azari was a renowned cultural figure in 14th century AD. Born in Isfaroyen, he became a poet for the Timurid king Shahrukh, and later he found his way into mysticism. Years later, he traveled to India and was highly adored by the Indian king Ahmad Shah. Through history, Khorasan was the land of spirituality.
Traditionally, the mausoleums and tombs of religious figures and mystics in Iran are built on high places so that the people and pilgrims could see their domes. But Baba Qudrat is an exception.
Baba Qudrat is a nickname that the people of a village with the same name have given to Hussein ibn Muhammad, one of the descendants of Imam Hadi, the 10th Imam of Shia Muslims. His tomb was discovered in a pit 400 years ago in the Safavid era. That was when architects dug a 50-meter tunnel on the side of a hill to reach the burial place, and then used rocks and a special mortar called saruj to build a dome over the grave. Based on an old tradition, people appeal to God to grant their wish by stacking 7 stones on top of each other and placing them around the edge of the dome from the outside. Baba Qudrat's shrine is located right next to another big attraction of North Khorasan. Some 20 kilometers east of the city of Isfaroyen, we pay a visit to one of the most significant national parks of Iran.
There are 28 wildlife conservation parks across Iran, out of which 2 are situated in Isfaroyen. Sarigol is one of the best wildlife parks across the country, where you can see unique species such as the Persian leopard.
Sarigol is home to a wide variety of flora and fauna. Its rich pastures have created a perfect breeding ground for rare herbivores like the Oriel wild sheep and the wild goat. Sarigol is also home to a number of incredible carnivores like the gray and red fox. The stone marten, which is exclusive to this area of Iran, as well as this incredibly cute-looking wild cat known as Pallas's cat, which lives in high-altitude habitats and named after German naturalist Peter Simon Pallas, who first introduced it to the world. But the most important species here is the king of this territory. I have traveled to a lot of places in Iran and across the world. But among them all, North Khorasan, its people, its history, its culture, and untouched natural beauties are things I will never forget. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Desde el corazón de Asia Occidental, la hora de Irán te sumerge en el mundo persa. Conocerás su cultura y posición en el mundo.
Hola, queridos oyentes, bienvenidos a una nueva emisión de La Hora de Irán. Es un placer estar con ustedes. Como siempre, agradecemos a todos los que nos siguen en cada programa y a quienes se unen por primera vez. Les recordamos que pueden participar y enviarnos sus comentarios y mensajes a través de nuestro sitio iranradio.ir. Hoy tenemos una programación especial para ti, diferente a los programas anteriores. El programa de hoy es en memoria del comandante mártir Qasem Soleimani, el comandante iraní que fue martirizado por los Estados Unidos de Norteamérica el 2 de enero de 2020. Así que no se despeguen de la radio. Vamos a empezar con una conversación sobre la personalidad del mártir Qasem Soleimani. Les invitamos a escuchar la primera parte de este programa especial.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. En el nombre de Dios, el misericordioso, el clemente. Muy buenos días, queridos hermanos y hermanas de América Latina, especialmente de Venezuela. El día de hoy tenemos un programa muy especial. Hablaremos de aquellos hombres que trascienden, aquellos hombres que dejan un legado en la historia y nunca mueren. Por ejemplo, comenzaré de un gran hombre como fue Simón Bolívar. Su verdadero nombre es Simón José Antonio de la Santísima Trinidad.